From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Full open lines this hour. Next hour, investigative journalist Joe Bullard joins us. Next hour, the mysteries of Florida's Coral Castle. Well, welcome a couple new affiliates to the very growing list of Coast to Coast members. KNOE AM in Monroe, Louisiana, and WXLM FM in New London, Connecticut. Glad to have you with us. While the Federal Communications Commission has officially grounded the idea of allowing airline passengers to use cell phones while in flight, it's not going to happen. Existing rules require cell phones to be turned off once an aircraft leaves the ground in order to avoid interfering with the cell network systems on the ground. The agency began examining the issue in December of 2004. The Federal Aviation Administration regulations also restrict the use of cell phones and other portable electronic devices on board aircraft to ensure against interference with the aircraft's navigation and communication systems. We do not want that to happen, do we? ANA Global Industries has recalled about 4 million Groovy Grabber children's bracelets because the paint on the metallic part of the bands contains high levels of lead. This is another one of those recalls you need to know about. It's very toxic to children and can cause adverse health effects if ingested. The flexible bracelets are made from metal bands with a wrapper and plastic covers that are decorated with a variety of colors. The designs include smiley faces, Chinese symbols, dogs, cats, aliens, flames, things like that. They were sold at vending machines in department, grocery, and discount stores, as well as shopping malls around the country between November of 2005 and March of this year. So if you have one of these things, you might want to get rid of it. Thousands of AIDS and HIV patients are risking their lives by refusing medication in favor of holy water. The controversial treatment is offered by a church in Ethiopia, which claims to have cured hundreds of believers. The church itself is more than 100 years old, a simple building painted in bright colors. It sits above a mountain stream, and the Ethiopian Orthodox Church believes the stream is holy water with the power to cure HIV and AIDS. No criminal charges will be filed in the case of a Sacramento, California mother of three who died earlier this year while competing in a water drinking contest run by a local radio station. The Sacramento County District Attorney released a statement that said her office had determined that the 28-year-old woman willingly took part in the contest and didn't show visible signs that she was ill or in danger of dying. Involuntary manslaughter was among the charges considered in the case. In India, unable to come to terms with the death of their pet dog, an elderly couple in southern India committed suicide by hanging themselves. The bodies of 67-year-old retired soldier and his wife were found in their home. Police said the childless couple had held a burial ceremony for their dog of 13 years called Puppy and hosted a feast for friends before hanging themselves in the bedroom. The 2007 Atlantic hurricane season should be very active with 9 hurricanes and a good chance that at least one major hurricane will hit the U.S. coast. Forecaster William Gray said he expects 17 named storms in all this year, 5 of them major hurricanes with sustained winds of 111, nice number, isn't it, miles per hour or greater. The possibility of a major hurricane making landfall on the U.S. coast this year, 74%. Compared with the average of 52% over the past year. They did predict a rough hurricane season last year. We did not get it. Scientists in Shanghai are developing a nuclear-powered lunar rover for the country's very first unmanned mission to the moon in 2012. The six-wheeled vehicle has been under development for 4 years at the Shanghai Aerospace System Engineering Institute, where a laboratory has been outfitted to replicate the lunar surface. The 5-foot-high, 440-pound rover is designed to transmit video in real time, dig for and analyze soil samples, and produce three-dimensional images of the lunar surface. And NASA has a new spaceflight champion, an astronaut, Michael Lopez Alegria, who is setting a new record aboard the International Space Station for the longest mission by a U.S. space flyer. He'd been up there for more than 197 days, the previous record, 196. Metallica, by the way, may work as a name for a heavy metal band, but a Swedish couple is struggling to convince authorities it's also suitable for a baby girl. Sweden's tax agency rejected Michael and Carolina Tomorrow's application to name their six-month-old daughter after the legendary rock band. In Sweden, parents must get the names of their children approved by the tax authority, which is in charge of the population registry and then issues personal identification numbers, similar to Social Security numbers in the United States. Well, I've got open lines for you this hour. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, ready to go, at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got an hour of open lines for you, and then the next hour we talk about the incredible Coral Castle. Just how did this guy that weighed a little more than 100 pounds some 60 years ago, how did he move those blocks of stone to build the Coral Castle? Well, a lot of people have speculated. That's what our show will be next hour. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hello there. Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Darren. I'm calling from San Bernardino, California.
Hey, Darren, go ahead.
My question is, if the country of Sweden is not going to let those parents name their son Metallica, how are they going to let Frank Zappa get away with naming his daughter Moon Unit? I mean, there's so many crazy names in this world, you know, what's her name? Gwyneth Paltrow named her daughter Apple. Moon Unit, so on and so forth. I don't see what the problem is with Metallica, personally.
Well, and can you believe a country having the right to control what you called your child? It's incredible.
I completely agree, you know. I mean, it makes you really think about, you know, how lucky we are to have a constitution that we have, you know. That it's just, I don't know. It's very, you know, bewildering to me. I mean, it's your son. You can name them whatever they want. If they don't like their name, then later on they can change it to whatever they want. But I don't know. Might be a copyright infringement, possibly.
Well, you know, once again, it's an infringement on privacy. And in Sweden, like I just said, they have the right there. The country, the government there controls the right to approve names of children before they put them in their population registry. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. Good morning to you. Well, let's go to our wild card line again. There you go.
Hi. Hey, this is Thad in Fort Worth, Texas. How you doing?
Good.
All right. My question is about your interview style. I've noticed on some past shows where you'll sort of like skip over a certain guest. Like, it's just like they're not connecting with you and maybe with some of the things that you believe. And sometimes you'll just sort of move around them.
Well, you explain that. Explain that a little more for me.
Well, I can't think of the last specific example. But I've just noticed it, like, and it's very subtle. But you're more subtle with this than Art. Art is he's more direct. I mean, he'll just like get to the point. And if he doesn't think that he can go anywhere, he'll just sort of move right along. But you can just kind of move the conversation very gently in another direction. And I just noticed that a few times, and I just think it's a good skill. And
well, I don't know how I got it, but I'll keep it up.
All right.
I don't know. Okay, I appreciate it. But if you had an example, that would help. Let's go west of the Rockies again. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Are you there? I hear you.
Well,
there
I'm
you are.
West of the Rockies.
No,
I'm on a wild card line.
What did I say? West?
Yes.
I did. Well, then I stand to be corrected. You are on the wild card line.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, here's my question. When I was real young, I came across a book in the attic, and I noticed that the author was Sylvan Muldoon.
Oh, yes. Was it the projection of the astral body?
I don't remember what the heck it was because I never got around to reading it. But my mother told me that my great uncle wrote that, and he was Sylvan Muldoon.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not.
He was one of the greatest authors on astral projection ever. I mean, ever. It was the very first book on astral projection I read. He wrote it with a fellow by the name of Hayward Carrington.
Well, you know, I think perhaps that was on there, too.
Well, if that's the case, you have the very historical book called The Projection of the Astral Body.
Unfortunately, I don't have it anymore.
Where is it?
I don't have the foggiest notion.
Was it really old, or was it a newer book that maybe you had bought? Mine was a paperback edition.
No, this was a hardback, and it was autographed.
Oh, a classic.
And I was just going through some stuff up in the attic, and I came across this book that had an autograph in it.
Did your family ever talk about him?
Well, my mom said he was her uncle. So that would have made him my great uncle.
Did they ever talk about what he did, though, the kind of research he did in the field of astral projection?
No, they just talked about that he was an author.
Man, that's incredible. Because, you know, not a lot of people understood or even wrote about that. And I got to tell you, he was one of the best in the field.
Well, that was funny because I majored in journalism in college and was basically an honor roll student all the way through. So I had quite a talent for writing.
It's genetic. How old was he when he passed on? Do you know?
I don't have the foggiest notion. I thought maybe you knew.
Well, I don't have the date that he died, but I know he's no longer with us. But
I'm sure he did.
You got to look for that book. It's a classic. I mean, it's not like a Picasso painting by any means, but it's a classic in the field of astral projection. Let's go to the East of the Rockies line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Dave calling from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Dave, what's going on in Chattanooga?
It's storming, George, but thanks for asking.
All right.
I've listened and to all of your topics and discussions about our global climate change.
Yes.
The one thing I haven't heard mentioned is the fact that, and this has been documented, I think, through NASA, and is public knowledge, that the moon is moving away from the Earth at the rate of, what, a foot?
No, less than an inch, just barely centimeters a year.
Is it?
But you are correct. It is moving away.
It's moving away. Now, it does have a magnetic pull on the Earth and, of course, the Earth on it. Now, everybody knows that when you take two magnets and put them close together, the poles interact with each other, and there's a point to where they stop interacting with each other. I just wonder if we're getting close to that point with the moon.
I don't think so. I think the movement at this point is so small, it wouldn't have that kind of an effect or a bearing on our planet. I think a couple things are happening. One, I think something's happening to the sun. And I think Richard C. Hoagland's theory of the hyperdimensional universe is also occurring, where the universe itself may be changing and heating up. I was interviewed just yesterday by the New York Times. They're doing a major story on 2012. And, you know, they asked me specifically what I thought. And I talked about the various possibilities that could occur at 2012, including nothing, that we're seeing major solar and Earth changes, or that we're going to go into a period of enlightenment, which is what I thought would happen several years ago. But now, as I am seeing these rapid changes, as Earth changes, I'm beginning to think that the Mayans really had a very strong foundation in celestial mechanics and understood what might be happening in the solar system. And so we talked about that. I don't know when the article is going to come out, but the world now is beginning to talk about 2012. And they're talking about how it could affect us and how it can affect our planet. So I don't believe the moon has anything to do with it, but I do believe the sun itself has a lot to do with it. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the show. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George. This is Joe from Tampa. I have a question about, you had a guest last week, which was talking, he was into demons, and he thought he said he saw demons all around him all the time. And just last night, you had a guest on that was talking about the OBEs.
Yes.
And what my question is like the guest that you had last night, he said that how he doesn't believe in the demons altogether. And but how do you feel about having the contradictory between the guests like that? Where do you fall in
Well, first of all, I really don't think it's how I believe is as important as what you believe. And let me explain that for a second. It's our job on this program to present you alternative views, and you make up your own mind. It's my job and Art's job and Ian's job to interview that person who has that particular view. And you are correct. Last week, Christopher Doyle talked about demons and evil spirits. Yesterday, William Buhlman talked about how he doesn't believe there are demons. You heard them both. What you need to decide is whether you believe Buhlman's story or Christopher Doyle's story. Yeah, I've got my own take on it, but that's not as important as yours, and I think that's very important. I mean, there will be times you will know exactly where I stand on something specific. As I've said before, I believe that there is extraterrestrial life in this universe. I believe that we've been visited on this planet. I believe that it's very possible we've been seeded and boosted and pushed along. But generally, I try not to interject myself in the interview. I mean, so many talk show hosts around the country doing their own shows, you know, try to make the program all about them. I don't. You know, the program is about the guests. The program is about you. During open lines, what I want to be is the facilitator or the interviewer. So I hope I answered that for you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Sharon.
Hey, Sharon.
And I'm right across the river from you in Waterloo, Illinois.
That's not too far from where the cave is.
Oh, really?
And the cave has taken in a few gallons of water over the last couple of days.
I can believe that, especially today.
It's kind of
anyway,
sloped downward. Yeah, what's up?
I had a thought. There's been a lot of talk about the Mayan calendar,
mm-hmm.
and it ends in December of 2012. The one point that I don't think I've ever heard brought up is maybe it does end there, but did anybody ever think that then it just starts all over from the beginning when they first started it and runs through the same cycle?
Yeah, some people have talked about that, sure. They have talked about the possibility.
Just missed it somewhere, I guess.
Well, there are different guests, and a lot of guests. I mean, you will hear on this program a handful of ideas about 2012. Bottom line is, nobody really knows what's going to happen. Everybody has their own suspicions. But nobody really knows.
Right.
And some people have speculated that we're in a cycle, that the Mayans knew about these cycles. Some people simply say they ended the calendar because the guy who made the calendar died.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? You know, we've got our own speculation. I just say it's ironic that we've talked about these global changes. And let's not argue the merit of what causes global temperature and,
right.
Earth and global warming. But the fact is that it's very bizarre that it's starting to occur in a rapid way as we get close to 2012.
You know, and I don't disagree. It's just maybe I don't want to think the worst.
Well,
you
can't think the worst. You've got to live your day. You've got to live your life every day like it's your last. You
know, right.
And I've taken that philosophy for myself. I try to instill it with my kids. You know, who wants to die with every penny that you've saved in the bank? I mean, what good is that?
Right. Right. I fully agree.
All right, stay with us. We've got open lines for the entire hour. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Joe Buller joins us as we talk about the incredible story of Coral Castle and Edward Lead Skolnin. Edward, more than 60 years ago, moved huge blocks of stone weighing thousands of pounds. How did he do it? Nobody knows, but people speculate. It's too bad in New York. A 19-year-old man died in an unbelievably strange accident, kind of similar to the moving of stones. 7,000 pounds of marble stone fell on him in a freak accident. He was stacking these marble slabs where he worked when about 10 of these pieces just fell on him, and he was a goner. That was a sad story. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, faithful listener Lance from Albuquerque writes and fast blasts me, says, please have the entire Coast to Coast audience use whatever power they can. I'm looking for a job. The situation is critical. Thank you. And he listens to the show quite often. He's part of the family. So throw Lance in your thoughts every once in a while. And everybody else to boot. Let's go to our wild card line. You are on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes. How are you and where are you?
Okay. George, I had a Bigfoot sighting.
You did?
Yes, I did, George. And I mean, these are not any Bigfoot sightings. George, I had a Bigfoot sighting.
Who are you? You sound like UFO Phil.
I met UFO Phil, too. And he's actually a good guy, but don't take him seriously.
Are you telling me you're not UFO Phil?
I'm not UFO Phil. Although I would like to be, but I'm not UFO Phil.
I'm going to ask you to say one thing first, and then you can move on with your story, okay?
Yes.
I want you to whisper in this phone.
Yes.
Want to keep a secret? Just like that. Man, you might be UFO Phil, but go ahead. I'll believe you.
Okay. This Bigfoot sighting I had was that I was walking down the woods, and all of a sudden I saw this big hairy creature about 10 feet tall. And all of a sudden he grabbed me and took him down his cave. And when he got to the cave, guess what? I met him, and they talked.
What kind of language do they have?
English.
No,
George. They took.
You're pulling my leg. Bigfoot that speaks English.
Yes, they're 10 feet tall. And they speak English, and they listen to the radio.
Oh, they do. Is that how they've learned?
Yes, they do. They listen to outside communication. You have to know, George. These creatures have been here longer than we have, and they said that we're. I'm not hyperventilating here because they're good. They're trying to fight the bad guys.
So you say they're friendly. They didn't hurt you?
No, they didn't hurt me.
Okay, so are you like friends now of Bigfoot?
Yes, yes. They're lots. They're not outnumbered. There's like 20,000.
No, there can't be that many. We would see more of them, wouldn't we?
They're stealthy. They're stealthy. They can easily. They're very stealthy.
So you're saying they're very, very intelligent.
Yes, they're very, very intelligent.
And they live primarily in caves.
Yes, very.
What do they eat?
They eat anything.
Animals?
Yes.
Oh, they do. Huh?
Yes.
So you witnessed a family of them, or how many?
Family, like 10 families at most.
How did you leave? Did you just walk away?
Yes, they let me leave on will.
All right, and you go and see them all the time?
Yes. George, I want to add one more thing.
Well, I want to ask you one thing.
Yes.
Where do you see them? Where?
George, I was in the Pacific Northwest.
Anything? Well, tell us specifically in case people want to go see these creatures.
Seattle.
In Seattle, in the woods there?
Yes. But I don't want to reveal too much because unless you want to email me...
I don't want you to give your email address out on the air. But I tell you what, you can give it to Tom, and maybe we'll email you. And if you want to fast blast me, folks, I am going to bet even money that was UFO Phil trying to pull a fast one. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Terry Hinwood, and I'm from San Diego.
Hello, Terry. You don't have to give your last name because now you have a million people look for your name in the phone book.
I have two quick comments. One is, about the bees. 2 years ago, we have fruit trees all around our property, and we always had bumblebees, honeybees, and wasps. Last year, I started noticing that there weren't that many. Couldn't figure out why. Then I started seeing these small holes in the side of the hill. I went up to investigate what these holes were, and out popped two honeybees. So my thinking is that the bees, the reason you're not finding any is because they've all gone underground.
No. See, what you might have had, you sure they were honeybees?
I am positive, because they were on the trees, and they, when they came out, when two of them came out, because I'm allergic to bees, so I stay away from them, but I watched them, and they went to the fruit trees, and then went back to the hole.
Well, see, there are mud wasps, and they live in the ground, and they make their little, you know, hives.
Well, see, that's
mud.
What I thought, but no, these were honeybees.
Honeybees living in the ground.
In the ground. So that's why you're not finding anybody, just because they've gone underground.
Well, if they've gone underground, though, that means they're still going to do their pollinating work. I don't think they're doing that.
Well, the holes are gone now, so, you know, I don't know if they've died now or what, but that's what I found. The other thing I wanted to say was that in 2005, when we had the very large earthquake and the tsunami that hit the Phi Phi Islands,
yeah.
I was raised and told that if the Earth shifted even a minute amount off its axis, that it would affect global, you know, all kinds of things.
Oh, sure.
When that quake happened, all the scientists said that we wobbled.
We did wobble a little bit.
We did That's wobble. True. So if we wobbled, that means we shifted but went back to our normal position. That could be why our weather is off, because here in San Diego, I have noticed that the weather patterns have been off 6 to 8 weeks ever since then.
That's interesting that you say that.
So, you know, if you grow up thinking that if even a small tilt in the axis happens and it wobbles, then it went off and came back. Why wouldn't that have any effect? Well, the effect would have been then the weather is all messed up.
Well, it is true. We've been having rapid global changes over the past couple of years. I mean, we've always had this happening, but I still think it's a cycle, but maybe this pushed it along a little faster.
It probably contributed to it.
Well, you may be right about that. Thanks for the call. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George Noy. This is Jeremiah from Virginia Beach.
Hey, Jeremiah.
I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening to you for about a year and a half off and on as much as I can because I work only in the mornings. I wanted to make this call for a while now. I wanted to let you know, only preface this by telling you that I'm a conservative 30-year-old male Christian, and I enjoy your show more than, you know, I can tell you. I really appreciate your respect for the callers and your respect for your guests. I believe that it's unprecedented in the radio industry, and I really appreciate your style of interviewing. And it's so compelling. It's kind of like it takes me back to, you know, old stories your parents would tell you. Or you kind of, you know, and I appreciate your unbiased interview, your technique that you give your guests, and I think that you're very fair and you're very compelling radio. And God bless the host that also hosts Coast to Coast, and I think they're very compelling as well. But I just wanted to let you know that for a lot of us out there, for a lot of us that are, you know, down, you know, middle of the road kind of people, you're very compelling radio, and I appreciate your interviewing style and what you do. It's unprecedented in radio, I believe.
Well, Jeremiah, now you can tell everybody you're my cousin.
No, I wish I could say that, George.
Thanks. I appreciate the compliment. That was very nice of you. Not necessary, but very nice. First-time caller line, your turn. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Your homeboy from St. Louis. Name is Charles.
Hey, Charles. What's happening?
I know Tom told me to be brief, but I wanted to agree with the last couple of callers that talked about your style. You're a great guy. You're a warm guy. That's why I'm calling. I don't normally call talk shows because when I listen to them, they don't have a lot of black callers on there. And I think one of the reasons for that because they make them feel bad. I don't feel that with you. two things happened to me in my life, and I've been waiting all of my life to tell this story.
All right.
I saw something. I saw a creature that was a little bigger than a dog that was black, and it ran behind a wall and disappeared. And there was two other people with me that saw this thing. It moved furtively, like it kind of like scuttled when it moved. It moved quickly, like a spider would move. And I don't know where that thing went. I haven't seen it since.
What did it look like,
Charles? I was in a schoolyard. It was at lunchtime. The bell rang, and I fell off of this housing, this fan housing for a ventilator fan. It's about 5 feet off the ground. The bell rang, and I looked to turn around to get down, to climb back down, and somebody pushed me, and I fell. And I remember falling, but I don't remember hitting. When I come back to, it was about 2:30 in the afternoon, and I was laying there in the schoolyard, and I was in plain view of everybody in the building, in the rooms, and from the street. And I don't know to this day why was I just allowed to just lay there.
I was going to say, you were there for a couple hours and nobody came to get you?
Nobody came to get me. So I didn't go back into school. I got up and I dusted myself off and went home. I wasn't injured. I didn't have a knot on my head or anything like that. And to this day, I don't know what happened to me. The school no longer exists.
That's weird, Charles. That's it. But the creature's a strange thing. What did the creature look like exactly?
It kind of reminded me of it was a creature in a movie called Mausoleum. It was a movie about these things in a cemetery, and this ball would fly through the air and it would stab people in the head. But there were some little short little creatures with little hooded like cloaks on. That was kind of scuttling around. It looked something like that. It was bent over, it was crouched over, and it moved like a spider. It moved really quickly. And it went behind these stone steps. It wasn't a wall. It was a lot. It was an empty lot, and there was a building there, apparently. And the only thing that was left of the building were these steps. You know how the steps are in St. Louis. They got these three or four, like, rises of the steps and big old huge piece of concrete, and you can't hardly move it or anything, so I guess they just left it there. But this thing ran behind it, and there was the steps, and then there was the sidewalk and the street in plain view of everybody. And this was in the daylight. This is not some haunted house. This is in late afternoon and in the summertime.
And did this look physical to you as opposed to a shadow?
It wasn't a shadow. It was dark as a shadow. It didn't have any features. It was coal black. And it was strange. I tell you what we were doing. We was playing a game. I guess you would probably call it a tag. We called it catch a girl, kiss a girl. Three of us ran around the corner out of the alley, and we saw this thing move behind the steps. And I thought it was a girl trying to hide. But as we got closer to it, and as my mind, I keep seeing this thing. It was coal black, and the sun was shining on it, but it didn't have any features, and it went behind these steps and disappeared.
Man, I got to tell you, Charles, you probably are lucky that this thing didn't come back out at you. Who knows what it would have done? Hey, thanks for the call. International Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Good afternoon, George. Good evening, I should say.
Hi, and where are you, by the way?
Steve from Mississauga, Ontario.
Okay, Steve.
Hi, I've been looking up some of Dr. Wallace Budge, going through some of his stuff, and I found a very interesting part. It spoke about the Egyptian religion is a pure monotheistic religion, which manifested itself externally by a symbolic polytheism. And he says Dr. Birch, who came on board, collected some striking passage where it says in Egyptian itself, God is one and alone, and none other existeth with him. God is the one who hath made all things. God is a spirit, a hidden spirit, the spirit of spirits, the great spirit of the Egyptians, the divine spirit. God is from the beginning, and he hath been from the beginning. He hath existed from old and was when nothing else had been.
So what are you saying here, Stephen? Would the Egyptians change
that? That sounded like I was reading the Bible.
It did. But you know what? The Egyptians never practiced that.
Oh, yes, they did. That's what he said. He said
didn't they say that there were many gods? Didn't they believe in many different kinds of gods?
No, but this is what I'm saying. This is contradicting everything I've ever heard.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I agree with you.
No, but this is it now. So this is new ground because in a hymn to Amen-Ra, it says, "Thou one, thou only one, who hath no second, whose names are manifold and innumerable."
Are you the only one who has found this?
Well, it's in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, if anybody is interested in reading the introduction.
You know, that's funny. I read that many years ago. I must have been about 20 years old. I also read the Tibetan Book of the Dead. But I don't remember that passage, at least not in the book that I had. Thanks, Steve. Let's move on. East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Michael from Tampa.
Yeah, Michael, what's up?
Well, my grandfather used to be a beekeeper, and whenever the bees would have a problem with the queen, they would move. And if there was no place for them to move to, in other words, the hive was occupied, they'd move underground. So what that lady said made perfect sense to me.
What kind of problems?
And I think that's what's happening.
What kind of problems would they have with the queen?
Well, the queen dies off, or the hive's invaded by Africanized bees. Any number
bees.
Of things could happen. Yeah.
Well, also, yeah, sure. Something's going on. Yeah, go ahead.
I am quite a frequent visitor of Coral Castle. And about 2 years ago, there was a cat there that followed everybody around. And there, right when you enter the castle, there's a big block that says, notice, be careful, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
This cat would jump up on this block and get eye to eye with everybody walking in.
And this was a stray cat, or what is it? Does it live out there?
Apparently, it was the only cat there. And then it would follow people around, and new people would come in. The cat would run right back. I've got a picture of him.
I wonder if it's the old reincarnated Edward Leedskalden.
Well, that's what I thought. But he did this for 2 years.
And now, no more cat?
No more cat. I haven't seen him in 2 years. But this was about 2 years ago, and he did this for a long time. It's a black and white cat.
And just acted kind of strangely, huh?
Well, I don't know. He just followed people around. New people would walk into the park, and he'd jump up on this the notice thing right in the front when you first walk in the park, and he'd jump up and get eye to eye with you and look you right in the eye.
Well, I tell you, maybe it was Edward Leedskalden. Who knows? Who knows? Well, that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. Those of you who want to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, do so, and you can get some information on Coral Castle and some pictures that our webmaster Lex has posted. But we'll be back in a moment. Now the full program begins with Joe Bullard, and I'm George Norrie, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.